Oxfordshire County Council has unveiled savings of £64 million to be made over the next 4 years. They include large savings in adult social care, transport and highways, and children's services, but contrary to fears across the county, children's centres may survive the cuts. Here, local government reporter Freddie Whittaker talks to County Council leader Ian Hudspeth about the proposed savings in his budget.
The figures are, although sort of a few million pounds more than expected, it's around about the same mark. So the fears raised when the cut in grant funding was announced have been sort of realised in this way. Are you expecting any surprises when it comes to the settlement day? Are you expecting this to change again?
It'll probably change again. I mean, the fact of the matter is all these figures are indicative at the moment. Of course, with the autumn statement coming out, will be the high level figures, but then the actual settlement won't be to the 19th or 20th of December, and that's when really we'll be able to firm up on the figures. However, even after that, through January and February, there's adjustments, both positive and negative, around the figures. So, you know, there can be movement. So all the time until actually the budget is set on February the 14th, there will be movement.
Mm. I mean, with regard to a few of the specifics, I mean, there'll be a review of children's centres, but what it looks like is that you're going to try and avoid closing them. Has this, first of all, tell me a little bit more about that, and also tell me whether this course of action been prompted at all by the outcry that there was when that conversation with staff was leaked out, when people started arguing that children's centres should be protected. Has this come partly as a result of that?
Well, the whole idea of talking Oxfordshire was going out to talk to residents. We had six roadshows across the county, over 1,000 people attended, about 400 responses to that conversation. Obviously, one of the big concerns was children's centres.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at it and we say, how can we create a system where actually we can save as many children's centres, and actually I don't envisage any closures at all. What I want to do is work with everybody, that's the communities, the children's centres themselves, the early intervention hubs, to actually provide a service and still have the very challenging task of a £3 million saving, because, you know, that will be a real challenge to achieve that target. Yes, it's in the latter years, but we'll be doing the review and starting the review, and if we make savings earlier, then that's fine, but we'll be working with communities and to see how we can achieve those savings.
Okay. Now, you say quite rightly that sort of £3 million is a significant amount of money to save from children's centres. I mean, someone who is quite cynical, I suppose, might say that the danger is with that is that you withdraw that funding from it, and although they might not close, they might the service itself might get worse without that funding. And then, of course, if the service gets worse, people don't use it as much, and then of course it closes eventually. I mean, how would you answer that if someone said, if a cynic like me were to turn around and say, what if this is just trying to close it by running the service into the ground?
It's about making it better through integration with other services.
Yeah, but
absolutely, it's not about running into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's about working with the community, it's working with the children's centres. Already I've been around to quite a few, and one of the things that struck me is that already in just very brief conversations people are saying, actually what we could do differently, perhaps to have a bit more income coming in, or change our ideas somewhere along the line to make it a more efficient service. So it's actually making it a more efficient service right across the youth sector. And I don't envisage any closures, and certainly I'm not as cynical as yourself in that respect. And I would want to see these thrive and actually play the part in the community, because certainly the talk in Oxfordshire, people were very vocal about it last week at the protest meeting. You know, there was handed a petition with over 15,000 signatures on, and you know, people really feel this is an important part of the community, and that's reflected in our budget.
Okay, and there's a proposed saving in the council service for people with special educational needs and disability services, £1.3 million saving. And I mean, it says in the briefing papers that it's going to be managed by continuing to reduce costs of out-of-county placements, etc. I mean, is there not a danger that with savings that significant, that people's, that the service you provide is going to be affected adversely, and that, that you're not going to, the council is not going to be able to do as good a job in looking after those people as it currently does.
We always make sure that, you know, our priorities and to look after the vulnerable and those people that really needed services, and that's a top priority for us at the council. And, you know, we want to make sure that we have those frontline services, so the way of still providing frontline services and help the vulnerable and needy is to actually look into make it more efficient services, and that's what we'll be doing with that package.
Okay. With highways, for example, with roads and potholes, I mean, more money being spent on potholes, but as we were discussing earlier, less maintenance, less general maintenance, less ongoing maintenance. I mean, a lot of people would probably suggest that the reason why the council currently spots a lot of potholes is because you've got teams out and about. Mm-hmm. If you're going to have teams out and about less often, is there a danger that the roads start becoming more of a problem because you're not noticing that the problem's there?
The roads are inspected anyway by the highways inspectors, and that sort of main highway inspection will still carry on, and we might have to change it slightly. Mm. But certainly the other aspect of that is that should any member of the public spot something wrong, as opposed to driving past and saying, you know, that's been there for 3 weeks perhaps, why don't they phone up 0845 310 1111 and actually report it, and then when we know it, we can actually fix and repair it. And that's one of the things about the increase in potholes, actually, because what we've been doing is making people more aware that yes, if they report something, you know, residents are our eyes and ears actually out on the ground, and by reporting things we can rectify it.
So you can rely more on residents, you think, to report these things?
We will still be doing the routine inspections, but as I say, encourage people to report.
Okay. Subsidised transport, there's a big review in this area. A big saving. Obviously, mentioned that this will include something that we've reported on, which is about taxis for people with disabilities. I mean, what's the answer there? Are you just going to stop paying for these taxis for people to get to school? What are the alternatives? What's going to happen?
Are there different ways of actually providing the same sort of service for people?
Mm.
For instance, nowadays, you know, all the buses are sort of kneeling buses, for instance. Can we make sure and give people the independence to actually use the regular bus companies? You know, that's an approach we kind of can use to see. Also, where we have different people going in as opposed to one person in a taxi, can we use two or three people into a different one of our special integrated transport unit buses and use those more efficiently? So it's actually about achieving those savings through better management, and rather than having sort of 85 taxis all descend in one area at one time, we actually look at it and say, you know, can we use multiple one taxi for multiple journeys?
Mm.
Remember the maths on that one. We spend, as you know, because you FOI does on it, we spend about 7 or 8 million quid.
Yes.
Every year on taxis, and the saving in those early years is sort of 325.
Yeah, no, I do understand sort of them as percentages.
Yeah. And that's it, but the bigger on the transport review generally is the fact that, you know, we spend, you know, sort of 14, 15 million on school transport, we spend £4 million on subsidised bus fares, there's £4 million on concessionary fares, because of course, when a concessionary passenger goes on a bus, we have to pay about half the cost of that. It's not all fully funded by the government, and it's demand led again. The more elderly people, it's great that people are getting off the roads onto the buses, but we have to pick up the cost, and it's demand led. And then we've got our own integrated transport unit, which we use to help the elderly, and overall that whole package is about £30 million. And can we, as opposed to having the silos, can we integrate it better to achieve the same outputs?
You're talking about demand, and another area where it's very demand-led is obviously adult social care. Now, I mean, savings having to be made, I mean, you've been essentially going to be bailed out with this extra £10 million of funding from the NHS, which is great. It's a good windfall, but like it says, it's not going to happen every year. Is there a danger that this just spirals out of control if reductions carry on at the same level, if your grant keeps reducing? Eventually, I think, assume it would have to go down to zero if it carried on reducing. If your grant keeps reducing, and if pressures keep rising, if people keep getting older and older and living for longer, and indeed moving here, what's going to happen? What happens at some point down the line? At what point do you turn around and say that the council is no longer functioning in its role of looking after older people?
Well, I think we're certainly a long way off that situation, but obviously you've seen the Barnett graph of doom, where they're saying that, you know, if we carry on spending and it's eventually all our expenditure and be out of services. So what we've got to do is look and see, can we do things differently? Can we work with the NHS better to actually make sure that we get value for money for it, try and make sure that people stay in their own home, because actually that's where people want to be. They want to stay in their own home, they want to be have their own front door, and working with the district councils to have shelter, extra care housing, to make sure that people can stay in their own home is one way to ease that demand. But it is a pressure, there's no doubt about it. You know, we're not shying away from it. It is a pressure. I'm very grateful to my chum Eric for finding the additional funding from the NHS, which he's always telling us it's really good funding. It's a shame it's not the 1.2 trillion that he promised you as well. Yeah. But we've got that funding, in all seriousness, and we'll use that efficiently to actually make sure it's integrated in the social and healthcare. But of course, the caveat is, will that be ongoing, and you know what happens if it isn't?
Okay. Oh, you mentioned there your mate Eric Pickles, and the fact that he got the figures wrong recently. I mean, regardless of that, he then obviously in that interview he accepted that he'd got them wrong.
Yeah.
After I corrected him, we understand that. But even after accepting he'd got them wrong, and even accepting that the financial situation was not as great as he thought it was here in Oxfordshire. He still said that there was no reason why Oxfordshire County Council should not be able to protect frontline services. And, I mean, this budget, these cuts are being made in frontline services. Potentially, if you're cutting taxi journeys or if you're cutting money for taxi journeys for people to get to and from school.
But we're still providing that.
I know that
that's exactly. Eric and I are working on the same page there, because you know we are protecting the frontline services, and yes, we are reducing the funding, but actually we're going to be doing it more efficiently, because those people will still be getting the taxis or a different sort of minibus perhaps to get them to where they're going. So we're actually protecting those services, but delivering it in a different way, a more efficient way, which is beneficial for the residents of Oxfordshire and their council tax.
I mean, household waste recycling centres, are they count as frontline services?
That's always a tricky question, isn't it? The statutory minimum is we have to provide one recycling centre.
For the whole county.
So therefore, it's a question mark over it, but we know people like them, so how can we work with people to actually provide the services they want it locally for them? But of course, a recycling centre is the need locally for it now, because actually all the district councils have very good recycling facilities, and therefore is the need to go to a recycling centre as great as it used to be, because actually all your recyclables are collected on your doorstep, which is fantastic news. Oxfordshire's got the best performing recycling rate in the country, so you know we're doing that right, and is there a need for them?
It's amazing how often that term statutory service comes up, because I think a lot of what's happening here is you're having to strip everything down to the bare minimum, to what you have a legal responsibility to do. Does that mean that the council's been too generous in the past? Has the council in the good times been too generous with its money? I mean, providing over and above statutory things with like home to school transport. The whole reason that that's changing is because there is no statutory requirement for you to bus people to their sixth nearest school, but at the moment you're doing it. Has the council been more generous in the past than it should have been, or is this just sort of a very unfortunate situation that we've found ourselves in?
Well, I think it's a very unfortunate situation we find ourselves in with the reduction in funding, but we all know that we've got to reduce the deficits. It's quite clear that we can't just carry on maxing out the credit card, so we've got to do things more efficiently. The difficulty with what's statutory and what's not statutory, when you start to look into it, I think we've got some pages about 1.5 inches thick of what are the statutory and not statutory functions, and some of those are intertwined within each other. And of course, you know, we are a rural county, so we try to be as fair as possible and equitable right across the county to assist those people. So in the past, perhaps there have been some services that have been more than statutory, but we've really got to look because the main thing about it is the county council is here to protect the vulnerable and those who need the services most, and that's got to be everybody's priority, to make sure the vulnerable are protected and those people actually need it, and providing a safety net for them. And we've still got to provide that safety net, and then we've got to look at the other services. We'll look.
So was the council, do you think, in any way irresponsible or mistaken to pay for things that were non-statutory beforehand, or was it just the fact that, I mean, the going was good and the money was there, so why not?
I don't think it's a question of why not. I think the situation was that people would say that's a good facility for people to have, or that's a good function for the service for the council to provide. When times are hard, then sometimes you have to make the tough decisions to actually rein back in. It's a bit like your own household budget, in a sense, that, you know, it varies depending on your income. You know, if your income's good, then you actually have that ability to dine out more frequently.
Right.
But your statutory job is to provide your food for the day, which might mean you eat in all the time, and that's the sort of decisions we've got to take. Because again, you know, what is the function of the county council?
Mm.
It's there to provide a service, in particularly for the vulnerable and needy. Mm.
Okay. I mean, looking at this, so potentially, I mean, there's a general election coming up in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, and obviously a lot of savings have been concentrated in these first few years. We've already saved a huge amount of money and needing to save a huge amount more. A lot of it before 2015 comes around. You don't think that there's been a bit of a concentration to sort of get it all out of the way and sort of put people through more hardship than they necessarily needed to be put through, so that central government, your colleagues in central government, can sort of triumphantly herald this amazing deficit reduction when it comes to 2015, but without really taking any notice of what's happening in David Cameron's case, his own backyard, with these cuts being made. Because it is going to be very difficult for people. It is already very difficult for people.
It's already difficult for people. We've got to reduce the deficit. We still have a deficit.
Mm.
We're not actually reducing the debt. There's some really serious and tough decisions that have still got to be made, whatever happens after 2015, because it's important we reduce the deficit and live within our means. David Cameron is aware of what's going on in his patch. He's been very vocal with me to make sure that I'm aware of what the comments he's getting back in as well, and he's passing that information on, like all the MPs. You know, Nicola Blackwood's the same. She's been having conversations with me and sort of standing up for her patch to make sure that I'm aware of these things. But ultimately, the question is, we've got to live within our means, and that does mean we've got to reduce the deficit.
Okay. It's interesting to see that funding is going to be cut to the Mill Arts Centre, which your predecessor is obviously now very involved with running. Is it something that Mr Mitchell is going to be pleased about, do you think?
Well, he's doing a very good job at the Mill Arts Centre, because actually using his skills with his accountancy skills, he's really got in there and he understands the figures and can see working forward how to create a good balanced budget. And of course, it's a tapering budget. Balance that we're doing, similar to the Cogs Museum, if you remember, in Whitney, where we said we're going to taper, and that was actually part of Councillor Mitchell's budget. It's a tapering subsidy, and I'm sure that Councillor Mitchell has used his expertise in accountancy to make sure the mill is a successful venture.
Do you think it's a shame that gradually, I mean, like you said, almost going back to the idea of what's statutory and what's not, clearly things that weren't statutory were being funded for a reason, like you say, it was seen as a good idea at the time. Do you think it's a shame that councils generally, not just this one, I mean district councils are having to do the same thing, culture and things like that, you say that money for COGS got tapered out, money for Mill Arts Centre got tapered out, Oxford Inspires, that sort of thing. Do you think it's a shame that councils seem to be playing less and less of a role in supporting cultural projects in the areas that they cover?
I think we've got to look at COGS Trust. Actually, it's a very successful trust, and it's important that we sort of use that model. So actually we do have the cultural aspect of it, but again, it comes down to what our priorities, and our priorities as a county council, obviously, are to protect those vulnerable and needy that need it most. And, you know, some things we've got to look at and say, is that a priority for the county council, or could it be delivered in a different way? And that's what I'm sure the Councillor Mitchell will do with the Mill Arts Centre.
Mm. Okay. All right. And just one final question. I mean, this budget process, I remember speaking to you about last year's one, and I know that that's something you were more involved in as well, because you were portfolio holder for that at the time. I remember you saying that it was a very difficult thing to go through as someone who represents an area of Oxfordshire.
Mm-hmm.
What has this been like? Having to look through papers that are going to be published today for Friday, which say that, I mean, there's £3 million being cut from children's services, that sort of thing. How does it feel to be part of a desperate times call for desperate measures? How does it feel for you to be part of a process like that? I'm assuming it's not what you got into politics to do.
I didn't get into politics to be a slash and burn politician, but equally so, I didn't get into politics to sort of have a flabby council, for a better phrase. Actually, it's about providing good service that people value, and we're providing efficiently and value for money. That's my aims. It is very difficult at the moment. These really are challenging times, and you know, the meetings I went to at Talking Oxfordshire, there was an awful lot of sort of criticism hurled at me, and you know, I took it, I listened to people, I understand where they're coming from, but ultimately we've got to make those tough decisions to have a 4-year balanced budget. That's what you've got there, 4-year balanced budget that can look forward, and people can say, actually, Oxfordshire County Council are really looking after the residents, because you can see that 4-year balanced budget that's providing the services still, might be in a different way in some ways, might be sort of asking voluntary to take over a bit, might be redesigning some of the services, but we're still functioning and providing those services for people.
Okay. All right.